Mr. Lewin, Unreal 15. So, was there any stage during the voyage when you were officially told what your destination was? Can you remember?
Yeah, I think there must have been. I can't exactly say. I don't exactly remember.
Because you talked earlier about the fact that everybody assumed you were going to North Africa.
Oh yeah, but they knew that much. Yeah, I knew that much. But
But you can't remember any presentation, any.
oh no. No, I don't think there was anything. I don't remember anything.
When you slept on a night, did you sleep in your uniforms?
Well,
Because there's a U-boat threat.
yeah. Well, you did. You didn't have much choice really, because see, on the mess deck, all you've got is a hammock, and there's no room to put anything. Even if you sort of took your trousers off and maybe your blouse, the back of your trousers, you probably have them. You wouldn't be wearing the blouse during the day because it wouldn't be cold. Not that cold anyway. No, I think most of them kept their trousers on.
And what about
Yeah.
life jackets? Were they
Oh yeah, you always wear life jackets, yeah.
would you wear that, or would that just be, you would wear that on a night?
I think so, yeah, I think so.
Were there any incidents that you can remember involving the escorting ships, or any
Well,
moments of danger, or what you thought might have been danger at the time?
no, I don't think there were any flights or anything like that. Nobody sort of, nothing untoward happened. I think probably most of them, if they spoke the truth, they were probably the same as me. They were just hoping against hope that you weren't going to get torpedoed. That was all,
And so that was a real fear to
Well, that
everybody.
definitely, because I mean, there was all sorts of stuff going down,
Did people talk about that?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see much of your sergeants and officers at this stage?
Well, yes, you did do. You used to see the sergeants and warrant officers and the officers. They had their own quarters and like their own cabins, and then they had their own sergeant's mess and the officer's mess. But they used to sort of mingle fairly well. Because the thing was, they had to keep up the good and well,
How did they do that?
and well, even if they only made themselves available, it was something. If they hadn't made themselves available, they may well have said, "Well, you don't care very much," or this, that, and the other.
So they would show their faces.
Well, it was a sort of personal thing, really, It was a person-to-person thing, really.
Do any names spring to mind in terms of NCOs and officers that you felt, seemed to care about the men maybe more than some of the others? Was there
Well,
people that you liked particularly out of the?
I think they were all pretty good, really. They were all pretty good. They were all, because you see, the thing was that it wasn't as though it was, it wasn't, I mean, if there was anybody there who didn't know that they were going out to North Africa, well, then they must have been deaf or something,
So you didn't really need to be
No,
told.
they didn't really know.
Did he make any attempt to kind of put on any entertainment during the voyage?
Well, they used to put on a perhaps a concert or something like that. You always used to find someone who was play the piano or sing a song or
Can you remember anything
whatever.
about any specific
Well,
memories of that?
no, well, he used to be mainly of like a sing song or something like that, but nothing very special about it. Because you see, you can't with a troop group, she didn't say you were the only ones on it. There are others, and they've got to do their own thing. So, well, that didn't mean to say that you weren't just confined to just a small area. You had a big trip, and you could. There was no reason why you shouldn't go. Why you shouldn't go up to the bow, or go back to the back to the stern.
So you had freedom of movement.
Well, more or less.
Who were the other units on the ship?
Well, I mean, we would have had the whole of our brigade on there. I'm only assuming, but.
Did you meet anybody? Can you remember meeting anybody from other units while you were?
I didn't know anybody really. I didn't know any of them really. Mm-hmm. We never used to meet them that often. It's quite likely they would have been on that boat with us, you see. But
did they mark New Year's Eve?
No, I don't think so.
So that was just another day for you?
Well, they may have done it in the sergeant's mess. Or the officer's mess. But so far as we were concerned, I don't remember that there was. You know, we were on the high seas then, very likely, so.
So how long were you on the ship?
I don't know, really. I can't remember.
And what do you remember about your arrival at Algiers?
Well, you know, I don't know about anyone else, but I just hope that we get there in one piece, and I didn't worry about how long it was going to take us or whatever, you know. Another day was another day sort of thing, and just so long as we got there and get on to dry land. That's the way I felt about it.
So what happened when you got there?
Well, we
What was your reaction when you saw the dry land?
I think in the main, I expect the majority of them were half pleased to get there, because I mean it was.
So you're pleased just to get there in one
place? Well, because I mean with all the U-boats, and they've been especially busy, and we've lost such a lot of stuff, and it was always a chance, you know, and that was the thing. I mean, that was, to be quite honest, that was my priority anyway, and I think there's a lot more to it as well, you know, because you used to hear about all sorts of shipping going down, you know, could easily have been you.
So when you got to Algiers, what happened?
I think when we got off the boat, it was quite well done. I tried to keep the, as far as I could, kept the companies together. I couldn't do that on the boat, but I mean, you know, when we got off, I would obviously put them together, and so wherever we went to, that when we sort of got to Algiers, and we went somewhere rather from the boat into transit somewhere.
How did you get there?
You know, but the companies would be all together then, and A, B, C, and D, and all the companies would be together. Of course, the only people that there were other problems, because you see that we took a certain amount of our transport over, and because that's another thing you see that happened during the time that we were at Rye, all that transport was waterproof. That's how we knew that we were. That was the obvious thing to tell us that we were going to make a journey. And And then, of course, the camouflage, the transport camouflage as well. And the famous number 69 was put on the, that was our number, 69, I always remember that.
That was the number that was painted on the
The number on that was painted on our transport was 69. I don't ask me what it stood for, because I've got no idea. But
and that was a way of identifying your
transport, and that 69. That had been done for some time. That had been done possibly before we even got to Raleigh.
So even on exercise in England, you would have...
That 69 was still on there. And it was on either on the... It was either on the, one of the... it would be on the one of the front mudguards. Could be on the side. One on the back. And it used to be a circle with the 69. I always remember that because that was just, even in the days when we were in England, and if we, the recreational transport, sometimes in the evenings to the towns in Norfolk and wherever, if you went on the recreational transport, they would put the vehicles in a park somewhere, and you would know what to look for if you were, this number, you see. And then, of course, it was very handy when we were abroad because there were all sorts of vehicles all over the place. And if you could see in 69, you thought, well, that's it.
You knew you were near home.
That's it. Well, you used to think that.
So you arrived in Algiers and you moved to this transit camp. How did you get there from the ship to the transit camp?
Well, I should imagine we would have marched most of the way.
Can you remember much about that march?
No, I can't. I can't remember. I can only remember what... I can't speak for the other companies because they didn't necessarily have all been going to the same place. It's very unlikely that they did. They would have been fairly close to each other, but I'm not saying that they would have gone to the same place. I can only speak for...
So what was the place that you went to?
Well, we only just went to... I remember, it was just like a little village sort of thing with some... And they just put us in somewhere and... well, that was it, really. We knew that we weren't going to be there very long, but... I mean... They all had somewhere to go. It was all sussed out long before we got there, you see.
So what was your impression of, what was your first impression of North Africa and Algiers?
Well, I didn't think it was too bad. I didn't think it was too bad at first. I thought Algiers was, well, I always refer to Naples as being a stinking place, and I refer to Algiers in the same way. But
so you weren't impressed?
Well, I wasn't overly impressed because, you see, in both cases, it's a Algiers was a port, just the same as Naples was, and it's inclined to be a bit dirty, I think. But, it's just the way it was, you know. I always refer to Naples like that because the climate in the main is hot, apart from one little season in the winter months, and otherwise it's usually hot. And I wouldn't say that.
What about the local people? Did you have any contact with them?
Oh yeah, they were okay. We didn't pay much attention to them really.
Did you get a chance to kind of look around in Algiers?
No, not really, because because you see, the thing was. There was a plan of action. We knew that sooner or later we were going to be called into the line and that sort of thing. So that was really the main concern. So far as
so what happened at the transit camp then when you got there?
Well, nothing. We were just sort of settled ourselves in and amused ourselves, you know, and we weren't called upon to do anything, nothing, you know.
So how did you amuse yourself? How did you amuse
yourself? Well, you know, there was all sorts of things, usual card schools, and there wasn't much you could do.
So were people kind of a bit devil may care on their attitude to losing money at cards and things at this stage?
Oh,
you knew you were going into work.
It didn't matter. If you won, you won. If you lost, you lost. That was it. You know.
And what if you lost a lot of money? How would you?
Well,
were people borrowing money off each other? Do?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't really important, you know.
Can you remember any of the keen gamblers that you knew at this time?
Well,
was there anybody that had a reputation for winning money or losing money? Or?
No, I can remember some. You can always tell a good gambler. When you see him sit down, when I say a good gambler, I mean, there were some of them. I mean, we used to get plenty of gambling going on, you know, when we were here in England. And
so who were the good gamblers?
I can remember that there was some. There used to be quite a lot, and there used to be. I never thought that I would never have put Taffy James amongst them anyway. But there were some people playing with Taffy James who used to do a lot of gambling. You know, mainly the main game was Bragg.
And would privates and lance corporals be able to play with sergeants?
Oh, yeah.
There wouldn't be any.
It don't make no difference, no.
What about the officers?
Oh, no.
You wouldn't see them?
No. Wouldn't even get the NCOs in unless they were. Well, they had to be under a sergeant if the NCOs were in. You very seldom see. They used to do, in sergeant's mess, there used to be a certain amount of gambling. But even, you know, in my time in the sergeant's mess, there was always a gambler. There was always two or three gamblers, really.
So who, do any names spring to mind from this early period? The fellas.
The early one, well, I can think of several names who was always glad to have a game of cards. There was two or three different, the ones I could talk about, people in Eck Water Company. There was a local corporate, he was Thomas. Ned Bitter. There were loads of them, really. Quite a lot of them, really.
So it was a common, it was more common.
Oh, yeah.
Majority of men would be.
Yeah,
would be.
Wouldn't be fine to lose a few of them.
So at the transit camp, you were free to amuse yourselves in that way. Were there any kind of special lectures or special talks about preparing for?
Now and again, yeah, you'd hear, you'd possibly have a few words sometime or other, perhaps from somebody like the Parsley or maybe the intelligence officer.
Well, what would the intelligence officer be talking about?
Just try and give you a little bit of gem about where you were and what the situation was going to, try and give you some idea of what the situation was going to be and what things to look out for, warning you against this, that or the other, like in the little villages in North Africa, you get a load of, there's always plenty of dogs, for instance, running about, but of course that was the thing to them, was of course the rabies, and that was, they used to, you know, warn people about about that if you wouldn't want to make a fuss of. If you happen to be in the village or going through the village, you wouldn't, you know, because you never know about these dogs. And then when they do turn a bit nasty, it's a bit of a job to get rid of them, sort of thing, you know. Just general things.
And did he give you any talks about the local population, about how to deal with them?
No, not really, because they weren't all that well up on it themselves. They knew more or less what they were like. They didn't have any first-hand knowledge of them, really.
You mentioned the padre. Did you have much contact with him when you were churchgoer?
Well, in a way, you know, I suppose, supposedly, perhaps it's not the right thing to say, but there were some people who looked upon the padre as a bit of a joke, you know. Well, in the same way as people in City Street look upon some of the parish priests in that sort of way. I don't know. I think personally that they chose the. We always had a good padre, and it was a, you know, when you're in trouble and there's casualties and things like that, they become quite important really, because they're a good comfort really, you know. And some people get, well, they react in a different sort of way, and sometimes the padre can be very helpful.
Can you remember who the padre was at this time?
I don't know the name. We've had the same padre for a long time.
So you had the same one later in Italy as well? It was the same one?
He was in Italy. He was in North Africa and Italy. He was in Italy. He was the same one in Italy. We had the same medical officer in Italy that we had in North Africa. Jones, Captain Jones. Because the padre and the medical officer were... used to work together quite a bit. Quite often they were. There were sometimes cases where they used to need to be together, and he was really pretty good at that, across the Captain John. But he was a bit of for a long time.
So you were at the transit camp. What happened after that?
Well, of course, they got their orders, and we had to go up in the line. And I suppose the first big problem was Sedgemoor.
We'll get to that. But can you remember the move from the transit camp, which I assume was quite a way behind the line? How did that work?
Oh, that was, the companies were separately placed, when we left, we sort of came out of transit. We were safe at nights and that sort of thing. When we left there, of course, it was to get nearer to the, I suppose really, that we would, what we were making for was the Sedgemoor area, you see. And so we had to, we were then, from then on, there was no bullets or anything like that, you had to.
But how did you?
How
did you get there from the transit camp?
Oh, usually on your own. Well, out of the transit camp, you may have been taken a little way by transport, but at that stage, I wouldn't have thought. I don't think we went very far. And most of it was done on foot.
So, what do you remember about your arrival at Sedgemoor?
About
your arrival in the Sedgemoor area?
Well, I can't really. I can't really be very, I can't tell you a great deal about that, because what happened, so I can only think what happened. I was still with what, just the little, the few of us that were, there wasn't so many, that were in this reinforcement company, our company, and we were just sort of held back in reserve and that. But any movement going forward, you know, which once we left the transit, we would have then gone forward and made it, I would imagine that that was our, and that is the general direction that we were making, and would probably have been Sedgman, I think. Mm-hmm. Can't say that I know, but I often imagine it was. And so far as we were concerned, I can only speak for what happened to us, because all we were doing, we just sort of tagged on right behind the others, and we were in constant communication with them, but we were a little way back. And wherever we were always just that little way back. And we were there to be called upon should we be needed, you know, if all of a sudden something happened.
So the rifle companies would be further forward.
Exactly, yeah.
And so you wouldn't have, I mean, the other veterans have talked about Bald Hill and Green Hill.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, but South Africa, North Africa was all hills. It was dreadful. Anyway, yes, I know what you mean.
But you weren't actually on those positions
at that time. Not in the first instance. I mean, in the early stages.
So you were a reinforcement group, slightly behind.
Right, behind. We were behind. There weren't that many of us.
And anyway. Where do you think you were?
I couldn't tell you. I honestly couldn't tell
you. But it wasn't actually on the positions opposite Green Hill and Bald Hill and the railway tunnel.
Well, we were in constant communication. We were at as close as for that. But
And you were still in headquarters company at this
time?
No, you were in recruit company, reinforcement company. So at this stage, you've moved up towards the front line. How were the rations organised?
Rations? Well,
had you moved to combo rations?
We hadn't. No, we hadn't got combo rations at that stage. No, we hadn't. It wasn't long before we did start getting them, but we didn't have them in the early stages. What they tried to do was to move as much as they could the cooks, and they used to do the cooking on, well, they used to have to do the best they could, you know. They sort of came along all the time, and given their due, but so we had to sort of take it as it came, you know. And in the main, we used to get a lot of, they used to get some, what was my, we used to get little tins, what they used to call it, M&V. It was like stew, that's what it was. It was like stew. It was in a little tin. And the cooks used to have a, always had a tremendous supply of this stuff, as much as they would carry, because that was the easiest way to feed anybody, just whack it in and warm it up, and that was it, you know. There was a little bit of veg and a little bit of meat and gravy and that. And I think they called them M&V or something like that. It was in like a little tin, like a tin of soup.